All right, good morning, everyone. Boker Tov. So we are preparing for Pesach. And this year, instead of doing Divrei Torah that are specific to different sections of the Haggadah, what I wanted to do was focus on general themes, values, key ideas in Jewish tradition in the Torah that are crucial to our overall composition as observant and aspiring Jewish people. Throughout the year, we need to think about these things, but they actually come to the fore at the Seder in terms of a focused discussion that we can have, that you'll notice that these things come up at various points throughout the Seder. So it's going to be up to you to do your own homework to figure out where these apply in your Seder. Do you find a place for them? Where do they fit? Good morning, welcome. I'm sorry, I'm sitting a little. The truth is, I could probably move back now that we have. Should I move? I'll swap with you all just for a second. I'll slide. I'll just slide a little bit. Okay. Now I'm good. Okay. So these, I was originally, when I was thinking about this, we were going to call it the top 10 themes. Because top 10 is the thing. But then I was thinking that that's just wrong. Because there was no way that I could choose 10 and consider those the top. So I went through a list of different values, and I'm sharing them with you. They're on this page. We're going to go through each one of them, but I would suggest that you think about them as a potpourri, similar to the way that you could think about the Aseres Hadibros. One way to look at the Aseres Hadibros, according to many Rishonim, is that these are the top 10. These include all of the subcategories of Judaism. The other way to look at the Aseres Hadibros is actually very different. The same way that when somebody comes to convert to Judaism, the Gemara says, Maseches Yevamos, we tell them a smattering of mitzvos. You give them some hard ones and some easy ones. You give them a smorgasbord of commandments. Mixas mitzvos kalos, mixas mitzvos chamuros. So in that respect, the Aseres Hadibros are just that. Some of them are easier, and some of them are more difficult. Some of them are more fundamental, some of them are less. That's a different way of looking at the Aseres Hadibros as the Jewish process of conversion. We all became Jewish through Yetzias Mitzrayim. We received the Torah at Har Sinai, so in that respect, we became Jewish. So we got mitzvahs, we got some easier ones, we got some harder ones. So this is not meant to be an exhaustive list, an authoritative list. This is actually a random sampling. I took out some ones that I was originally thinking about that are maybe, you know, you talk about emunah, faith, faithfulness. That's probably the most important. I dafka didn't want to take some of the more traditional ones, try to do something a little bit different this year. So let's start with one, gratitude. Gratitude is an essential part of being Jewish. According to the Chovas HaLevavos, the root of our connection to Hashem in terms of how we feel towards God comes from a sense of gratitude, that we thank God for giving us everything that we have, directly and indirectly. But it's very much a part of the story of Egypt. The Medrash in the Shmos Rabbah, Tzigizind, it says in the Shmos Rabbah, Paro shows up one day, and he says, Vayokam el achadash, asher lo yada es Yosef. He didn't know who Yosef was. So the rabbis debate, was he a new king, or he just made himself as if he didn't know Yosef? So the rabbis say, wait a second. He didn't know Yosef. Yosef was one of the great social architects of Egypt. How could he not know Yosef? How could he not be indebted? How could he not feel a sense of gratitude? So you know what the Medrash says? You know, if you can't figure out how to have gratitude to another person, Sofo lichfor betovas ushal makom. At the end of the day, you know what you're going to say? Lo yadati es Hashem. He starts by saying, I don't know who Yosef is. So the Medrash says, yeah, 5 minutes later, he's going to say, I don't know who God is. A person who lacks the midah, the character trait of gratitude to other people, to the server in the restaurant, to the person who holds the door for you, to the person who, you know, gave you a ride. If you don't have that character trait of being grateful, of having Hakaras HaTov, then it's a huge challenge to develop a sense of gratitude to Hashem. So what do we do in the Seder? The Seder is the building block. It's the basis of our relationship with God. It concludes with a beautiful love song of Shir HaShirim. This is where it's all going to begin. So a huge part of the Seder is dedicated to gratitude. Where do we find maybe the most obvious demonstration of gratitude? Dayenu. Right, Dayenu. So let's drill deep for a second. Would it really been, had it been enough to get to Har Sinai and not get the Torah? What do you mean? It says Yom HaShishi. It was the sixth day. Yom HaShishi. It's waiting for HaShishi, the sixth day. The creation of the world was waiting for that day, the sixth of Sivan, although there are some who say it was the seventh, the sixth of Sivan to get the Torah. The whole existence, we only have a universe so that we could bring godliness into the world through the vehicle of Torah. So it would have been enough to get to the mountain. We all sit around together, then we would have said, all right, enough. What's the pshat? So what's the answer? What's the pshat in Dayenu? It's not that the pshat, that it's enough that we could have gone home after that. But rather, it's enough to say thank you. Each stage is necessary. The definition of geula, of redemption, is arriving at the base of Mikdash. That's the last of the 15 steps of Dayenu. Each one of those is essential. But it's that you don't have to wait until the 15th to say thank you. The waiter brings the first course, you say thank you. They pour you a glass of water, then you say thank you again. Then they bring you the main, then you say thank you again. The Rebbe Shlomo wants us to understand that we need to say thank you for every step, each shalav. And therefore, yes, we couldn't have gone home after getting to Har Sinai, but we could have said, thank you for bringing us together. That we should have an experience of being in the presence of God, that we should actually be able to get together as Jewish people around one mountain, Vayichad Sham Yisrael Ke'ish Echad B'Lev Echad, that itself, that's enough to be thankful for. So you should say thank you for that. And then there's another place, perhaps, where the thank you comes up in the text of the Haggadah. It's a little trickier to find, but the choice, we know that the din is that you have to learn at the Seder. You have to have an experience of learning, which is Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral tradition, which breaks the psukim, the verses themselves, that breaks them apart and finds the meaning in between the lines. That section is, anybody remember? In Magid, which is the section where we take a section of text and then break it up with explanation? Mm-hmm. Yes. The psukim from Devarim, that's what we call Tse Ulamad. Go out and learn. Arami Novid Avi. So that is, that is one, imagine you have one text, like imagine a blackboard, I didn't bring the board, but you have a text. Arami Novid Avi Vayered Mitzrayim Vayogar Sham B'Mseim Ot Vayihisham Lagoy Gadol Atzum Varav. Period. That's one unit. That's one pasuk. Then they take that pasuk and they break it down in little segments. Arami Novid Avi. Who was that? Vayered Mitzrayim, explain it. Vayogasham, explain it. Each little piece. So you have the one pasuk, and then you have it broken down, Torah Shebichsav, and then Torah Shebaal Peh, one at a time. Seder? That's essential to the Haggadah. You have to be Dorish. You have to learn it. Why'd you pick four psukim from Devarim? If someone would have taken a survey, of course they would have picked Shemos. That's the story of the Exodus. Why are you picking from Devarim? It doesn't make any sense. Well, those are very specific psukim. Where are they from? That's right. The Mikra Bikurim, meaning the farmer gets the new fruits, he brings them to the Beis HaMikdash. That's called Havoas Bikurim, the bringing. That very familiar with. There's a parade, people stand up, you have a beautiful celebration with the actual fruits themselves, you bring them in a basket. Then when you get to the Beis HaMikdash, you have a special mitzvah of Mikra Bikurim. You have to declare five verses, these five psukim. It's interesting, not coincidental, that in the Haggadah, of those five psukim, we only say four. Just like there are, how many cups? How many? Five or four. How many languages of geula are there? Four and five, right? There's the fourth, but then there's the one that's not quite there yet. There's the Vehevesi. Getting to the land of Israel, not 100%. So the fifth cup, you know, is it there? Do we drink it? That's, you know, the same thing. This fifth pasuk, from the Mikra Bikurim. The point is, when the guy gets to the Beis HaMikdash, you can imagine, for goodness sakes, it's probably now sometime in July or August. When did he plant? Or when did he start working for this crop that he's bringing in July or August? Maybe even earlier, much earlier, right? He probably planted in the winter, right? He probably started in October working the land, and then November, December probably planted. Then it's over the winter, it's going to grow, and then it's going to pop up in the spring. He's going to harvest and he's going to bring in the summer. The guy worked on this for 8-9 months. This is his whole livelihood. So how does that person feel when he has that little fig, that little fruit, that first of this is his whole economic stability? How does he feel in the way that he speaks through Rabbeinu Shalom and telling this story of Aram Yudah Vadevi? He feels a sense of gratitude. It permeates his whole being. So it makes perfect sense why the Baal Haggadah, this is one of many reasons why we chose these four psukim, because they give you a real sense of gratitude. That's what it means to feel gratitude. It's that farmer who shows up the first day. Number two, leadership. You'll notice that the rabbis have a seder in Bnei Brak, but there's one rabbi who's not there. Who's not there? Rabbi Gamliel is not there. There's a braisa, Tosefta. That's Rabbi Gamliel was having a seder with a man by the name of Baitus ben Zunin in Lud. Where is Lud? Right? It's not near, it's not in Bnei Brak. It's not even exactly near Bnei Brak. But that's near the airport. Right? Why was Rabbi Gamliel not in Bnei Brak and he was in Lud with Baitus ben Zunin? What was he doing there? So it's very likely that if you look at the people seated at the table, let's go through the names. Hold on. Maiseb Reb Eliezer. So this is Reb Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, the student, a very, very prominent student, one of the greatest sages of his generation, student of the Beis Shammai, and Reb Yoshua, his common interlocutor. Reb Yoshua was a Levi. Reb Elezer ben Azariah, the famous Hariani Convention Mishana, we'll get back to him in 1 second. Next to him is Rabbi Akiva, whose hometown they were in. Bnei Brak was Rabbi Akiva's home turf. And then Rabbi Tarfon. Who is the tallest finger in this set of fingers? Well, you would think it would be Rabbi Akiva because it was his home turf. But who is it? Reb Elezer ben Azariah. Rabbi Elezer ben Azariah is at the center of the table, which means he's the host. He's in the middle. Why is Rabbi Elezer ben Azariah sitting at the head of the table when Rabbi Akiva is the host of the Seder? Well, the answer is because the Gemara says in Brachos that there was a period of time, a very brief period, where Rabbi Elezer ben Azariah was established, he was appointed, and then he says, I have to ask my wife. His wife said yes. He became the Nasi for a brief period of time when Rabbi Gamliel was deposed. A huge controversy erupted in the Beis Medrash because of Rabbi Gamliel's leadership style, which many of the other rabbis at the time felt was too harsh, because he required that Rabbi Yeshua had to show up on Yom Kippur with his wallet, driving his car, which the Gemara says there was a big discussion about how Rabbi Gamliel's leadership affected the other Talmidim in a bunch of different ways. So for a short period of time, the rabbi said, Rabbi Gamliel, we do not accept your leadership. And that's probably why Rabbi Gamliel is having the Suda not in Bnei Brak with the other most prominent sages of the generation, because he was with his friend Baitus ben Zunin and Lud somewhere else. Because he was not at the table. He was deposed. And you learn from this Gemara that, you know, yes, there are different styles of leadership, but at a certain point, even Rabbi Gamliel had to learn from his colleagues that a certain standard, a certain style is too harsh. It's too much. Yes, there is a value in the strong centralized leadership of Rabbi Gamliel, who came from Hillel, the Shul Shalta, the original tradition, that's very good. But there needs to be a balance, and that's why Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is now in the center. They did ultimately return Rabbi Gamliel, and then they would take turns. They called it Shabbos Shalmi. Whose week was it to give the shir? Some weeks, every other week, it was Rabbi Gamliel or Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. But for this short period of time, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was in the middle. But here's another interesting ha'ara. Rabbi Sachs has an awesome essay on this in his Haggadah, but I wonder if there's a different... He has one mahalach, I wonder if there's a different mahalach, which is that the story is that these rabbis were misaprim b'yitzias Mitzrayim kol oso halayla. What time did they finish their Seder? Right? 5:30 in the morning. Unbelievable. They were going all night. Our Girsa, there are other Girsos, there are other texts of this, but our Girsa says they were misaprim b'yitzias Mitzrayim. They were telling the story of Yitzias Mitzrayim, but that doesn't fit. Because there is a long-standing machlokas between Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and the Chachamim about what time Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim expires. We all know that you cannot eat the Korban Pesach after Chatzos. It becomes Nosar. The Korban Pesach expires at midnight. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, well, Korban Pesach is inherently, it's totally connected with the mitzvah of telling the story. So just like you can't eat the Korban Pesach after midnight, you cannot tell the story after midnight. Which is why, parenthetically, many people in this room probably try to eat the Afikomen before Chatzos. That's because, following Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, if the Korban Pesach has to be done before Chatzos, and the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim has to be done before Chatzos, well, the Afikomen, which is connected to the Korban Pesach and the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, should be done then before Chatzos. And then there are even more people, some of them are in this room, who try to finish all four cups to finish Hallel before Chatzos, because then all the mitzvahs of the night are fulfilled, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, in the pre-Chatzos period. So far, so good? But why is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah talking all night? He holds that it's only until Chatzos. So there are different answers to this question. But I wonder if the answer to this question is that, in a certain sense, they had an Amida L'minyan at that Seder. All the Rabbanim, these were the great Gedolei Hador, these are the Rishonim of the Rishonim, these are the greatest of the greats, the original Tanaim. They all looked at each other and said, look, you know, we know you're the Nasi Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and we know your opinion is that you have to stop at Chatzos, but we're going to take a vote. We're going to have a quorum. There are five rabbis at this Seder, and you have to decide. Are you going to be mevatel your opinion? Are you going to say that, yes, my Das Yachid is that I should stop now, but if we have an Amida L'minyan, we have to come to an agreement of how this one Seder is going to work. So then we're going to follow the Rov. And so Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was willing to put aside his own personal shita because he had to follow the Rov in this one. You're right. The next year, he probably went home and he said to his kids, he's like, oh, last year was a disaster. Those guys were up till 5:30 in the morning. We're done at 12:30, kids. That's it. None of this 5:30 in the morning story. But in this Seder, perhaps the pshat is that he was machnia himself to follow the Rov. And that's the contrast to, not exactly the contrast to Rabbi Gamliel, but it's a different style of leadership. It's understanding that there is sometimes a place for collaboration. Doesn't mean you can't do your own thing. You're in your own house. You're your own posik. Gesundheit. I'm not a posik. So if I'm in my own house, I can't do my own thing. But if someone is a Gadol Hador and they want to follow their own shitas, they can follow their own shitas. But when you're in a Seder with other people, proper leadership says, you know, let's take into consideration what other people are doing. And you see the same thing. It's interesting. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, I was darshining that you should say Yetzias Mitzrayim Balelos until no one listened to me, until Ben Soma came along. Meaning, he says, I tried to convince people, but it didn't work. So I'm not going to force them until they're mekabel it on their own. Saying Yiddish, Hofnish, doesn't help. So Ben Zoma came along. Everybody listened to Ben Zoma. Ben Zoma was a great darshan. So everybody said, oh, Ben Zoma says, and he's like, oh, shkoyach. I've been saying this for, you ever have that? You know, I've been saying it for 5 years. No one listened to me. Ben Zoma says, oh, brilliant idea. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, but you learn something from that. Why does that got to tell us? Because it's telling us that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was saying, Seder. It's a Seder. You don't want to accept it from me? You don't have to be mekabel from me. Ben Zoma says it's good. But you should just know that I hold that shita as well. One last point on this is that there is no chance. All right. We're going to have to do b'chipazon. What can I tell you? One more point on this. Who's the greatest leader of all time? Moshe Rabbeinu. And what does he say sometimes? What is great leadership? It's about facilitating others. It's making space for others. Moshe Rabbeinu says, look, the Baal HaGadah, you are going to put together this story. You have to make sure. Who's in the middle? Who's in the center? The Borei Olam. It's all about the Ribono Shel Olam. If you put me in this story, it's going to muddy the waters. It's going to get people confused. They're going to think it's about me. In this case, the leadership role dictates you disappear. Even the one place where it's mentioned, Vayaminu Bashem uva Moshe Avdo. Moshe Rabbeinu is like a tzigikim. He's like just coming along for the ride. He's not in the center. Because sometimes real leadership is about fading into the background and letting the main character in the story shine. And that is what Moshe Rabbeinu does in the Haggadah. Family. Family has an incredibly strong pull for each person. When family is in a tense place, it's a big challenge. Because each one of us has a very, very strong pull to family. It's almost irrational. There's a new book called, not so new anymore, Educated by Tara Westover. Interesting story. I didn't read every page, but I read most of it. One of the interesting things about this book, for those who have not read it, it's about a woman, a young woman from a Mormon community, a Mormon family, who is intent on becoming educated, even though her family's religious and life philosophy is not supportive of her education. And it's a very complicated, it's a very tragic story. She has an amazing story, and she's a hero of this story. It's an amazing book. But one of the interesting things about this story is that despite how, and I'm not one to judge, but what seems to be a very dysfunctional and problematic family, she can't break away from it. She always feels the pull back to her family. And so the challenge for her is, how do I follow my dreams and become educated and do what I think is right for me, but at the same time be connected to my family? So where does that come from? Where does that meshicha, that pull to family come from? So it probably comes from the Ribono Shel Olam. That the Ribono Shel Olam put within us an innate feeling, a connection to family. And he models that for us. Because when we leave Mitzrayim, he tells us, B'ni B'chori Yisrael. Inside each one of us, we have a neshama, we have a spark, a chelek elokam imal, that is always drawn back to the Ribono Shel Olam. Wherever we go, no matter how far we stray and how lost we get, we always come back to the Ribono Shel Olam deep down inside of us. That's the spark of Avinu Malkeinu. That's the spark of our father, our mother. That's an innate sense of a neshama that a person has. And so perhaps a concentric circle of that is the feeling towards someone's actual physical feeling. Right? Dr. Jerry Loeb has a great ha'ara. He says, very often, the way that we think about God is the way that we have experienced authority from our parents. The people who feel like God is an old man with a stick probably saw that from their parents. So it's this idea that the concept of family, it's part of what it means to be a person, because the Ribono Shel Olam enables us to feel connected to him. That's the most essential relationship of family. The Ribono Shel Olam is teaching us he is our father, he is our mother, he is our spouse. A lot of different family dynamics there. But ultimately, we feel connected to him, and we always feel that connection, no matter how far we go. That's the same kind of indescribable feeling that people have about being connected to family. And that's what this Tara Westover, her connection to family, that's like our connection to the Ribono Shel Olam. And that is a key point of the Seder. When the Ribono Shel Olam is taking out the Jewish people. He's telling us, B'ni B'chori Yisrael, you are my family. I am your family. We're in this together, whether you like it or not. Perhaps that's why when we get to the Korban Pesach, he tells us we should model that to our own families and get together as families. So the Korban Pesach ideally is supposed to be Sel Lebeis Avos, one sheep per family. If you don't have the right number of people, you have a giant sheep or you have a few family members, so then you bring the next door neighbors. So then you bring, you know, your close friends. The friends are like family, at least for us, within a 300-mile radius, you could say. Ideally, though, it's supposed to be celibes avos. And that's why it's preferable to have family together at the Seder. So the Rambam says, ideally, a person should have a child at the Seder. Personally, preferably their own children. But if not their own children, so the Rambam says, then a person's a spouse. Or whoever, you know, whatever you're going to, but it's going to start from the core family and then move outwards. And what was the challenge that Lavan posed? Aram made Oved Avi. What did he try to disrupt? He tried to disrupt the family, and to a certain extent, you might argue, he succeeded. You know, by messing around with Leah and Rachel and getting everybody, you know, upset in the situation, so then that disturbed the situation at home with Yaakov. And so then you have the children and the tension between Rachel's kids and Leah's kids, and you base Yehuda, base Ephraim over many, many hundreds of generations. This idea of the family dynamic, thinking about the role of family in Yiddishkeit. Who are the people in our family and what roles do they play? You know, especially today, many Achronim, already in the Shulchan Aruch, commentaries point out that in the time of the Gemara, there was a discussion about whether women do Haseba, whether women lean at the Seder. So today, Achronim point out that an Isha Chashuva, a woman who is, how would you translate chashuva?
Important.
Important, dignified. So an isha chashuva does do haseba. So I don't know what the practice of all women is, but I know in my house, every woman is an isha chashuva. I'm not supervising whether they do haseba or not, whether they lean, they don't lean. A long time ago, many women did not lean. They would rely on the Rav Yah, who says that Bizman Hazeh today, leaning is not a demonstration of freedom. But the idea that, wait a second, who are the people in my family and how do I look at them? How do I think about them? If that person is an Adam Chashuv or an Isha Chashuva, that is important in terms of thinking about the concept of family and the family dynamic. Empathy. I'm just going to truncate these a little bit, so I will try to get through as much as we can. There is a beautiful essay from Nechama Leibowitz, Aleha HaShalom Zichrona Levracha, in the Parshas Mishpatim. Her third essay in Mishpatim notes that 36 times in the Torah cautions us about how we treat strangers. Not even Shabbos, Kashrus, Taras HaMishpacha, Bris Mila, no other mitzvah has this kind of coverage. 36 times. And the Lashon here is very interesting. Here it's in Parshas Mishpatim because the Torah says, V'ger lo sone v'lo silchatzenu. Lo sone v'lo silchatzenu. Do not hurt him and do not press him. Is it interesting that in the Haggadah, in the Parsha that we are going to read, it says, V'yar es onyenu, he saw our suffering, v'es lachatzenu. Lo silchatzenu. Do not Al tilchotz alav, don't crush him. Why not? Because we felt it. We felt ve'es lachatzenu. We felt anyenu and lachatzenu. It's not surprising to me that the maschil beginus, we always start avodim hayinu and then vayotzienu. It didn't have to start avodim hayinu. It should have just said vayotzienu. Why do we have to relive the misery? You talk to somebody who went through a traumatic event, so just thinking about it is traumatic. So why do we have to go back, Avodah Mayinu, and then Ve'asam Oleinu, Ve'aslach Hatzeinu? You talk about all the details. But you know why? Because when we remember what that felt like, Ve'asam Oleinu, Ve'aslach Hatzeinu, we're not going to do that to somebody else. V'ger lo sone v'lo silchatzenu, v'atem yedatem es nefesh ha-ger ki ger me'yisim be'eretz Mitzrayim. And this is the whole essay that she has here. It's about the fact that we were slaves in Egypt, so we know what it means to treat somebody else. Because we were in that experience ourselves. And maybe that's why that has to be maslo beginus. Yes, maslo beginus, you have to start with the bad on the pashat level, is because you can appreciate the good more. That's why nobody ever makes, Rav Kook points out, nobody ever says birchas hagomel, a special Thanksgiving blessing. Nobody ever says that for winning the lottery. Right? You don't say birchas hagomel when you finally, you know, when you finally get the pay raise that you were looking for. You say birchas hagomel when you're in a difficult situation, and then you're freed, because you can really appreciate it so much more. A person was ill, and then thank God they come better. They were in a distressed situation, and now they are much more at ease. So that's one reason why maskil beginus, you got to start with havanah mayinu. But now we have another reason. We got to talk about how bad it was for us, because we want to make sure that we feel it the way that we're not going to treat other people. It's interesting to me that listening to survivors, especially non-religious survivors, all kinds of survivors, they all say the same thing. Why they want to tell their story? So nobody should ever have to go through what they went through. Because if a person, lo aleinu, had that kind of experience, that's going to drive them to how they're going to treat other people. Now, it's not always that way, and that's one thing that the Chacham Leibowitz does point out, that the Torah has a counterbalance to that, because sometimes a person who, unfortunately, lo aleinu, was a victim of something, may try at some point later on to act that out and to perpetrate that on somebody else. So the Torah gives the other safeguards against that. But the core, the natural response should be, you know, somebody was put in a wooden box for 3 days with no air and no food and no water, and their dignity was stripped from them, and then they were put from one level of Gehenna to the next level. So what's their life going to be like after that? They never want to see anybody suffer. They never want to see a child, not their own child, not somebody else's child, not a neighbor, doesn't matter what religion they are. That's maskil beginus. Avodim ayinu lepar b'mitzrayim, so we don't want to see anybody else suffering. We don't want to see children in Syria suffering. We don't want to see children in Honduras suffering. What we do about it, that's a second question. But the first is, v'ger lo silchatz v'lo silchatzenu. Lo sona v'lo silchatzenu. We have to develop a sense of empathy to other people. That's the experience of being avodim hayinu lefar b'mitzrayim. Love. So obviously, ahava, love, is a main, maybe the main theme of the Haggadah. We have a principle, ava mekalkelas es ashura. Love, it messes things up. People do crazy things when they're in love. You know, you see, now, Baruch Hashem, I look back many years of hindsight, but I probably did, not most of them I can't even remember anymore. But I'm trying to remember all the stupid things, the crazy things. You know, you get out of a cab, you finish, you go on a date, you get out of a cab at Lexington and 34th or 29th, depending on which dormitory you're dropping off at. You get out of a cab and you see this guy. I'm not saying this is autobiographical. I'm just saying you get out of a cab and then you see the guy. The girl goes up to Brookdale or wherever she's from, Stern, whatever you're going. The girl gets off. She goes. And then the guy, he just starts walking off. He's walking in the middle of Lexington Avenue. He's jaywalking in the middle street. And he doesn't even realize it. Because he's so totally in the luft. He's it's like, and then, but I assume most drivers now in Midtown at Lexington and 29th Street, they know, yeah. Watch out for jaywalking. Why, you guys? They probably know this already.
Or the cars beep.
Yes, or they beep. So why is that? Because I have a mekalkel zashur, you do strangest things. Strangest things. Crazy, right? Totally crazy. Lahavdil, lahavdil. There's a country music song where there's a country singer, how he says this. He says, I don't dance, but now all of a sudden, I didn't used to dance, now I do. You make me dance, because Ahava Mekalkel Zashur, crazy things. The Rebbe Shalom loves us so much He told us, I have to put you in timeout for whatever reason, which is not for now. You're going to be in Mitzrayim for 400 years. After 210 years, he's like, I think we're going to go home now. What do you mean? You said 400 years. The Pasha says, after 210 years, the Moshe says, I can't take it anymore. I miss you guys so much. You can't stay over there. It's gefährlich. Ahava mekalkal says Ashura. The Rebbe Shalom says, forget 400 years. Whatever, we'll make some kind of cheshbon. We'll say, you worked harder. We'll give you a discount. We'll change we'll do all kinds of... The point is, he says, I'm not going to leave you there for 400 years. I can't take it anymore. Ahava mekalkal says Ashura. Usually, says the Halakha Teferet Shlomo, Rebbe Shlomo of Radomsk, usually, the way the Rebbe Shalom works with the world is that he filters down the endless light, the energy of the Rebbe Shalom Kiviyachol, however this works, through various filters, from the Olam HaEmes, from Achdus Yisbarach, from godliness, till our world, whatever tiny crumbs, the fragments of light that we get, the spiritual energy, that goes through many, many, many filters. So the Halakha Teferet Shlomo says those are called Malachim or Shlichim. That's how the spiritual light of God comes down into our world. This is not on the night of the Seder. Because the Rosh Hashanah loves us so much, he says, get all of the rest of this out of here. I'm not going to jump through this hoop and then the next hoop and the next hoop. He says, Ani Hashem, Ani velo Malach, Ani velo Shaliach, Ani hu velo Acher. That's the Lashon of Pasachti. Lifsoach means to jump over. Vedilagti. Lidaleg means to jump. It's related to the word Degel v'diglo olai ahava. The Rebbe Shalom jumps over. So he says, there are no barriers today. On the night of the Seder, the love, the connection is so strong, we're going to end with Shir HaShirim, the night of the Seder. Many people, because we feel that the Rebbe Shalom's love is palpable. And that's why it's not Ayidei Shaliach. He says, I have to be there myself. The idea that the Rebbe Shalom loves us, that is a centerpiece of the Haggadah. And there is a very important essay that's developed here by Dr. Tversky, Rabbi Abraham J. Tversky, in his Haggadah, where he talks about this feeling of love that we have for Hashem, even though there were so many years of suffering. Because part of the question that we don't have a good answer to is we say to the Rebbe Shalom, wait a second, you love us so much, so why do we have to be there for 210 years? So why did there have to be these places that we know about 80 years ago? Why did there have to be? And we don't have good answers. We live with those questions. So he says, we live with these questions. But he says, I got a decent, at least insight, Dr. Tversky, and this is a man who worked with tens of thousands of patients, really understands the psyche of a person. He says, I was once in a pediatrician's office, he says, and a mother brought her infant in for a shot. And the child saw the physician, the child went berserk, started screaming and crying, and the mother had to physically restrain the child. I've had to do this. It's not pretty and it's not fun. And the child started clawing at the mother and kicking the mother and trying to get away in any way possible. But the mother held down the child, and he said what he saw was that the minute that the physician removed the needle and stepped away and the mother let go of the child, the child, the infant, clung to the mother, embraced the mother. And he says, wait a second, that doesn't make sense. The mother was just the one who held you down, who made you go through that traumatic experience. So why aren't you running out of the office saying, I never want to see my mother again? But that never happens. The child comes back to the mother. Because the child has such strong trust in the mother that even though the mother inflicted this pain on the child knows deep down that it will turn to the mother for comfort. The child will still come back to the mother, unless, lo aleinu, there are some cases in the world where even that trust is broken, lo aleinu. We should never know. No one should ever know from such a thing. And by the way, it's not surprising to me why when sometimes you talk about stories of people who left Yiddishkeit, the reason they left Yiddishkeit had nothing to do with the Ribbono Shel Olam, had nothing to do with Yiddishkeit. It had to do with the fact that their trust from someone was broken, and that trust is the model of their trust for the Ribbono Shel Olam. So they say, if I can't trust that person, mm-hmm. God forbid, they can't even trust a parent, Rachmana Litzlan. So of course their Yiddishkeit is gonna fall by the wayside. So he says, that's the mashal, that the same way that we trust our parents, and that we'll come back to them even when they do things that feel hurtful, and we can protest them angrily at the time, but ultimately we have this deep down, we have this trust in them with this love. So therefore the child still goes back, and that's why we come back to the Ribbono Shel Olam, because we say, we don't understand. We don't have a good explanation, and don't try to sell me one. And if anybody tries to sell you one, I'm not going to tell you what to do. But I don't have a good explanation. But we know that the Ribbono Shel Olam loves us, and there's got to be some explanation. And so we're going to keep coming back to him, even though that moment hurt. Freedom. Who could talk about Pesach without talking about freedom? Well, what does it mean to be free? You notice how at the Seder, we recreate the experience of Yetzias Mitzrayim. In Yetzias Mitzrayim, there was a rule that you couldn't go outside. Not only could you not go outside, you could not participate in somebody else's Korban Pesach. You had your Korban Pesach? Stay with your family. You don't go Pesach hopping. There's one Seder for your group. You stay with your group. You wouldn't want to go outside. The Malach HaMavis is running around the streets. You have the blood on the doorpost. You stay inside. The door is closed. It's just you. That, perhaps, is a key aspect of freedom. Freedom is about being true to ourselves. This is what Rav Kook explains in the Haggadah. You could find the Haggadah in the... And he printed separately, but it's also in the back of the Olas Raya. In the first section, in the Likutim here, on Cheiruseinu Ubir Chametz, he says, you have people, they're technically free, but they have what he calls a Ruach Shel Eved. They're a slave to whatever the outside is telling them. Chama will tell you, the first day in school, she decided she was going to become a dentist. And then the next day, she had a friend, and this is not Lashon Hara, because she's amazing, and you all know that I think she's amazing, but she had a friend who said to her, that's a really bad idea. You want to go on Aliyah, and you're much better off, it's going to be better for you to get a job in Israel if you go into computer science, and you'll do programming, and IT, it'll be better. So she went to the Academic Advisement Center, and she changed her major, so she went to Sci-Sims. And she finished with a degree in computer science from the business school. And she finished school and she's like, you know, I actually want to be a dentist. So not everybody has the ability to do all of their science courses in 1 year as a super senior in Stern. So Baruch Hashem, she's extremely gifted. And I didn't interfere with that to too much of an extent when we were dating. Although I wasn't sure after our first date, when we were sitting in the cab back at Lexington and 34th Street, when she said to me, she said, oh, what did you study in college? I said, history, English. I said, what are you studying? She says, well, chemistry, biology, and like, this is going to be a long evening. But in Baruch Hashem, now we divide the homework responsibilities equally. But she will tell you, she says, why did I listen to that person? I had an inner voice that said, I want to be a dentist. That's what I'm going to do for my career. But I'm listening to somebody else. Someone says, I want to dress in a certain way. I want to have a certain style of a house or whatever. But no, I can't do that because everybody else is telling me, well, I have to do it like this and I have to do it like that. What does it mean to be free? It means to be true to yourself. Rav Kook says, that's what it means to be, even if you're in a physical concept of avdus, but they can't take away the freedom of being a ben chor, being true to yourself, which is what he says is the pshat in charas al haluchos. Why is it that the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, a ben chorin is somebody who is free because they study Torah, They're osik b'Torah. Because the Torah is charos engraved on the luchos. What does it have to do with being engraved? What does freedom have to do with being engraved? The answer is that when you take ink and you print it on a paper, you can always remove the ink from the paper. The guys in the Smithsonian have amazing technologies. They can take it out. But something which is engraved is the essence of it. So being a spiritual person is the essence of us. That's what it means to be free. To come back to your neshama. What does my neshama say I'm supposed to do today? How does my neshama say I'm supposed to react? What is the Ribbono Shel Olam within me? What does he expect of me? Not what are the other people, or what is society, or what, all these things. And maybe that's why the Seder night, we close the door. Because we shut out all of the voices from the outside. We just connect to the inner voice on the inside. The Or Ein Sof, that inner voice that says, I am a Jew, I am a Chelek Elokam Imal, these are my values, this is my vision for my life. And it doesn't matter what's going on the outside. That's what it means to be a Ben Chorin, and that's why at the Seder night, we're always coming back to the values that are internal. That's the emunah, that's the connection. Curiosity. What is the mitzvah of Sipri Yetzias Mitzrayim? It's different than Zechira, which happens every night in Shema, because Shema is just I remember the Exodus, and that's it. Here, you have a key format, and that is questions and answers. In Judaism, we encourage curiosity. Get curious. There was a scientist, he was a Nobel Prize winning physicist in the 40s. His name was Isidor Rabi. His parents were European immigrants, Jewish. So he said, my mother, when I came home from school, always asked me one question. She didn't ask me, what did you learn today, Izzy? She said to me, did you ask a question today? Because for Jews, learning is about questioning. It's about curiosity. Avram Avinu, it was all about searching. Notice how when the Haggadah starts, introduces the Arami Rovidavi, what is the expression? It says, Tzei Ulamad. Go out and ask. Go on a journey. Be curious. Get curious. It means get curious about the Ribbono Shel Olam, about the Torah, about other people. Be curious. An important theme of the Seder. So I'll regalachas the last three because we're not going to have time to develop them. Number one is the idea of passion. Our Yiddishkeit needs to have passion. So it's not surprising that the rabbis who modeled the Seder for us, you know how long they spoke for? All night! Because they were passionate about it. If you're passionate about something, you will stick it out until the end because you enjoy it. You've never seen a stadium empty out of people in the third overtime in 17-degree weather in the championship game. I'm not talking about the Super Bowl because they make it in a dome, la, la, la. No, no, no. Chazak, you know, like...
A real game.
When it was in Soldier Field or when Lambeau, you know, this place where it's Chazak in January. No one leaves early. Because you're passionate about the fourth phase, whatever they... Are we passionate about Yiddishkeit? That's our Ikar passion. Our passion, developing Arami Rovid Avi, figuring out the idea of where we can find the passion in our own learning. You notice that there is a special Isra of Achilas Chametz, an Achilas Matzah on Erev Pesach. So Chazal give a very unusual image. A person who eats matzah on Erev Pesach is the equivalent of living with the woman with whom he is engaged before they're married. That and matzah is kind of an interesting hashvah. That's what Chazal say. Kabol arusas beveis chametz. It's jumping the gun. Don't eat the matzah too early. Just like you wait till after the wedding, then it leaves plenty of time to be together after that. Very interesting. But that's the point. If we really, really believe, if we're really connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if the mitzvahs really mean something to us, then we really are going to have that same passion. And if we're not there yet, that's okay, because we can still strive for that. And that's why that image, you know, the image of the couple who is in love, they're waiting to get married, There's no more passionate image than that. They're totally just in love with what they're doing. And that comes to the fore at the end of the Seder with Hallel. The Hallel doesn't have a bracha because it's spontaneous, many Acharonim say. It's not regulated. It's not structured. It's just spontaneous. It's just a feeling. That's the passion that we have. Self-control. Very important essay in Logic of the Heart, Logic of the Mind on Pesach from Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Zichrono Livracha. The idea of how liberation movements in history, for example, the French Revolution or the Russian Revolution after the Bolsheviks, mass killings, chaos, but not for us. The idea of Kachim, which is a highly regulated enterprise, the mitzvah of Korban Pesach, which has even more, Bikur Dalad Yam, there are more specifications, the notion of self-control as being essential to the concept of being Jewish and what freedom means for Jews, is just that, being in control of ourselves, not being just wild and reckless abandon. It's an amazing essay. And the last one is trustworthiness, another Jewish value. Again, these are just random ones. The Bris Bein Habasarim, Vehisha Amda, what stays with us? The Ribbono Shel Olam says, I told you I'm going to take you out. I told you it's going to be a while. I kept my word. He is true to us, and we're true to him. Yes, we went through horrible things, lo aleinu, decades ago. Not everybody has it easy. There are people who are going to sit down this Seder, in Israel especially, whose family members were taken away from them. We don't have good answers to that question. But just like we know that the Ribbono Shel Olam has been trustworthy, has been true to us, we are true to him. And that is part of the experience of the Seder nonetheless. So I thank you all for coming. I wish you a Chag Kosher V'Sameach. Have a great Yom Tov.